The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall, here today filling in for Stephen Flory. Very good greetings to you from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. We're in Edmond, Oklahoma today. You might have heard my voice coming from Israel, but we are here for 2 weeks of refreshment, rejuvenation before we head back to that land. And it's just been very wonderful bringing my one-year-old daughter back to see some family and even her grandparents. So we're really enjoying our stay over here. But it is hard, even when I'm back here in the United States, to forget about what's taking place in and around Israel in the Middle East, and especially in light of recent events in Syria. And this Syria is obviously an important nation that's been in the news for quite some time. 6 years now, the Syrian civil war has been raging on. The fight against ISIS as well been taking place in the background to that civil war in that nation. And when you live in Israel, you get just a greater sense of how real these events are. Usually, whenever we have any visitors that are coming to visit us in Israel, we go on a trip up to the north of Israel, up into the Golan Heights. The Golan Heights is a plateau above the Sea of Galilee, above the Jordan Rift Valley, and the raised ridge, if you like, that does continue over from Israeli territory into Syrian territory. And you can, as we do, we drive up to Mount Bentall, and many people that have visited Israel have been here before. It's a extinct volcano, one of, I think, four or five peaks that's kind of on the border between Syria and Israel. And we go up there really because it just helps you get a sense of how small this world is in some ways, how precarious Israel's situation is as far as their security concerns, and you know how vulnerable they are as well. And just standing above on this mountaintop, it's a location where they're, a defensive Israeli position. There are there's tunnels up there. There's different places where Israeli soldiers can hide out. It's because it overlooks Syria. It's an important defensive position that is maintained whenever Syria is at war with Israel, or has been in the past. Now it's more of a tourist site because you can walk through these underground tunnels. But the UN actually is still posted right there. When we were there just 2 weeks ago, overlooking Syria, there were two UN officers that were actually stationed up on top of this mountain with a big pair of binoculars overlooking Syria. They have been removed from their normal position a little bit closer to Syria because of the proximity of the Islamic State there. But as we take tourists, generally from America or Britain, on this tour through Israel, this isn't a biblical site necessarily, but it is one of profound importance because you just notice how close everything is. You can see territory from there where Islamic State is currently operating. You can see territory to the north where Hezbollah is currently operating. And you can even look at territory where the Syrian rebels are operating as well from there. And you're in a location that is closer to Syria's president, Bashar al-Assad, who's been the cause of the major cause of the slaughter of hundreds of thousands of people in his country. You're closer to him at that point than you are to Jerusalem, to Benjamin Netanyahu. So it does give you an idea of how real this world is, of how, the reason for Israel's precarious position, because on that day when we're traveling through northern Israel, we see the border of Jordan, we see the border of Syria, we see the border of Lebanon, where Hezbollah is mainly, and it just gives you an awareness of their vulnerability. And really that awareness is felt very much so by Israelis. And it does create a certain sense of sobriety amongst Israelis. It helps them see, it gives them greater clarity on what things are important in life, I believe, because they face a threat of war. They live with a threat of war. Israelis, of course, are drafted into their military, and they spend a number of years, mostly when they're young, in the military, 2 or 3 years, I believe. And so they're 18, 19, 21-year-olds, 20-year-olds going to war, protecting their nation. They're aware of how vulnerable they are. And then you even have, for the next 20 or 30 years, you have Israelis having to go to Army Reserve every year for 3 or 4 weeks to ensure that they are ready to fight if need be. And it's interesting because when you're there in Israel and you're close to these borders and you realize what's taking place 5-10 miles away in Syria or in the Gaza Strip, it does give you, there are some benefits to it. It gives you a greater sense of perspective. Living with the threat of war is not normal. It's not right. But it helps you not get distracted by day-to-day events. And it's interesting, actually, talking to Israelis about Americans, because there is obviously a common shared sense of values between the two nations, for sure. But they believe there is a sense of superficiality to American culture, and in some ways an ignorance of the outside world. And I don't necessarily believe that there is a difference between Israelis and Americans on the basic level. It's just the fact that Israelis are surrounded by the threat of war continuously. And that makes you think deeper about what's important in life. But put an Israeli in America for a decade or so without the threat of war, and I believe that they too would experience a narrowing of their focus. They would think about day-to-day things. They would naturally think more about things concerning them and themselves, and have a certain superficiality to their thinking. But standing on Mount Bentel, you don't have that. Again, you're overlooking Syria. The road to Damascus is right there. You see destruction of the town just on the other side of the Syrian border, Kenetra, a town that Israel destroyed in the Yom Kippur War in the early 70s, and then actually took a lot of territory in Syria, but then they withdrew and retreated outside of that territory and gave it back to Syria, and yet they haven't developed that, and it's a constant witness or reminder to what is possible on that border. But being up there, and if you do visit Israel, I definitely recommend going to this site. It does help you realize that news events are real events. Events that we talk about on this program, they affect real people. And the prophecy that we cover discussing those events as well is real prophecy, and it is happening on the ground. Prophetic fulfillment is taking place often. And today on this program, I want to talk about a marked change in U.S. policy towards Iran in eastern Syria, just across from Mount Bentel, and how that fact, this change in U.S. policy, looks to be aiding a fulfillment of Bible prophecy. So please don't go away. This is something that's important. Don't tune out when you hear somebody starting to talk about Syria. I understand. I understand when somebody starts talking about Syria that it can be difficult to understand because there are so many moving parts, so many people involved with divergent interests. It's difficult for those that are watching this often to keep track of what's happening on the ground. But I feel like if you haven't paid attention before, that now is the time to watch. Now is the time for watch. It's actually getting clearer what's taking place in Syria because we have the demise of the Islamic State. The Islamic State is going down. It's only a matter of time until it's virtually destroyed, and or at least it's doesn't control large swaths of territory. And because of that, you're seeing these major world powers, Russia, Iran, the United States, Turkey, get closer and closer to one another in eastern Syria. And as I said, if you haven't paid attention before, now's the time to watch. It is getting clearer, but it's also setting the stage for a fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Let me just explain a little bit about this. And we're not going to go through the whole history of the Syrian civil war. That's really not necessary right now for this moment, because what we've seen over the past few months is a change in the United States policy towards Iran. And this has been talked about on this program. It's actually, if you want to search Eastern Syria today in news.google.com, Google News, find out how many news stories are written about it, you will see a flourish of stories from today, I'm sure, yesterday, and even through the oncoming week. People are sitting up and taking notice, because you have, again, major world powers rubbing up against each other. Major world powers that don't really want to back down. Of course, the major belligerent power in this is Iran, and we'll talk about that heavily today. But the surprising actor, world actor in this, I believe, is the United States. And it's surprising because we've had 8 years of President Obama, whose policy vis-a-vis Iran was to bring them into the international community, work out a nuclear deal, a nuclear arrangement with them, somehow bring normalization of relations between Iran and America. And of course, that failed. The nuclear deal was accomplished. And why was it accomplished? Well, the United States was bent over backwards in every single way trying to bring this deal to fruition. And the war in Syria, the prolonged war in Syria, was a direct result of the Iranian nuclear deal. If the United States gave aid to certain rebel factions and kind of shut down Iran's march into Syria with their own troops, with thousands and thousands and thousands of their own proxies, it wouldn't have lasted as long, and perhaps Assad would have been gone years ago with hundreds of thousands of people alive still. And yet what happened was, with the United States unwilling to act against Iran in any venue around the whole world because Iran threatened to walk away from the deal, Iran grew in immense power in Syria. And it got to the point in Syria that Iran, with the help of Russia, of course, virtually assured that Assad would be able to continue in power over that nation. And if you look on the other side of the Syrian border, it ensured that Iran could gain a lot of control over Iraq because of this fight against the Islamic State, again, which we've been talking about on this program and the Trumpet Hour quite a lot. But there was one bit of territory that was left uncaptured by the Iranian regime and their proxy organizations. And that sliver of territory exists in eastern Syria. And that's important because even though they were fighting for so many years to ensure that they could have and control this large swath of land from Afghanistan through Iran, Iraq, Syria, all the way to Lebanon, they've been working at this, and they were so close. So close to being successful, which would have given them unparalleled power and access to the Mediterranean Sea, to Lebanon, instead of flying in all their weaponry to Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, or even to prop up the Assad regime. All they needed to do, or all they wanted to do, was to be able to send convoys of trucks across Iraq and into Syria. And that's still their goal. They're not backing down from this goal. But what's different is President Trump came into power. President Trump came into power and decided that President Obama wanted a close relationship with Iran. We're not going to do that. And we're going to see what we can do to work with other people around the world to actually stop Iran, stop Iran's growth throughout the Middle East. And it's interesting, it just happened today. I was just checking the news headlines, and even before this program, we have that the Saudi successor has changed. Now it's a 31-year-old. Why did that change? Well, back when President Obama made his first trip through, sorry, President Trump made his first trip to Saudi Arabia, first foreign visit. Who'd he visit with? He visited with the king. And then he visited with this man. That wasn't the crown prince. That is now the crown prince. And while Feature Story News just then talked about how he's a young man and hopefully this signifies some type of shift in Saudi Arabia, he didn't really talk about what shift it's going to create in Saudi Arabia. Well, if you do a bit of digging, this new crown prince is extremely backs a policy of containment against Iran to an amazing degree. And that's who Mr. Trump visited with when he was there. And now we have him in power. Now, potentially in power after the 80-plus-year-old, his 80-plus-year-old father might be gone. Then we're still going to have this strong anti-Iranian policy from Saudi Arabia because they see what's going on. Anyhow, President Trump has decided that he is going to try and contain Iran. And actions, what we've seen over the past month and a half, most notably the action to shoot down the Syrian jet. Syria, of course, is an ally of Iran and the Syrian regime. And how this came about was this Syrian jet didn't even target American forces. It just targeted American allies. American allies. And this has happened before, but the United States has done nothing. Now it happens where a Syrian jet bombs some American allies in Syria and American jets scramble for the first time in 20 years and shoot down an Syrian jet. That's a pretty bold move. And this, again, is just a culmination of Mr. Trump's new policy against Iran. We're going to talk about that more on this program today. We're going to go into more details and show you just what's happening in eastern Syria and show you why and how it is leading to the fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Syria is a far-off place, I understand. Even being here a week and a half now, it's just so easy to divert your attention from important prophecies that are taking place across the Middle East and across the world outside of this nation. It's so easy to get sucked in to our day-to-day life. And things are important day-to-day, I'm not saying that. But wow, look at the world. Things are changing right now. And Bible prophecy is going forward. And it's really time to sit up and take note. So we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to show you just what the United States is doing right now to try and hold up Iran in eastern Syria and how that this specific action could be leading to the fulfillment of a biblical prophecy. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The prophet Daniel wrote about a future confrontation between a power in the north and the king of the south. We are now in the time when these two major powers are quickly rising. The King of the South is stirring up trouble even today. It is critical that you know the identity of this prophesied power. For more, request our booklet, King of the South. Visit thetrumpet.com and click the Literature tab to select your free booklet.
The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. Of course, we're talking about here Iran's march across the Middle East and what the United States is doing to try and stop that now, marking a pretty big change from the administration of Mr. Obama, and how that is looking to fulfill a biblical prophecy, and specifically concerning this area in eastern Syria, this area that remained uncaptured by the Syrian regime, where the Islamic State was extremely strong and powerful. So what's happened over the past 6 months is the shrinking size of Islamic State's territory. And again, this is a good thing, but it's not necessarily what we should be rejoicing about, because then we have to come up with this idea of who rules that, or the answer to who rules that vacuum, who rules that space. And what we've talked about at length and even received lots of flack over at thetrumpet.com over the past 2 years is that we said that Iran is going to use the fight against Islamic State to gobble up Iraq and Syria. That's what we said. Because Iranian fighters, well, Iran is now cashed up and they're able to pay for mercenaries all across the Middle East, and they're pumping money and fighters into Iraq and Syria, this area where Islamic State controls. They control this area across the border there. And what we've seen reported on heavily at the Trumpet for the past 2 years is that these militias that fight on behalf of Iran, even though they're fighting in Iraq, have been extremely successful. Extremely successful. And they have virtually pushed Islamic State out of Iraq, apart from a couple of cities in the north, one big city in the north, Mosul. But what we've seen over the past couple of months is a revealing of this strategy of Iran to maintain control over the territories that are won from the Islamic State. And this isn't surprising. I mean, Iran's not going to invest billions of dollars in this fight against the Islamic State in foreign territory and then say, "You're welcome, Iraq. You're welcome. And see you later. We're going to go back to Iran. Or our forces are going to disband and we'll be just happy to submit to Iraqi government rule." Yeah, right. That's not going to happen. And the same thing could be said for what happened in Syria. And as I said in the first segment, Iran has been very successful with this strategy. And what we saw, even just going back to May 29th now, was this major conglomerate of Iranian-backed Shiite militias that have been fighting its Islamic State in Iraq made it all the way across Iraq, pushed out the Islamic State from most territories, and they have reached the Iraqi-Syrian border where they stopped, where they took a lot of pictures, where they celebrated, where Iran celebrated, not a victory necessarily, that they had rooted out the Islamic State, but a victory because Iranian-backed troops have made it across Iraq, announcing to the world that Iran understands right now that Iraq has fallen to them. Yes, you have a prime minister and a body in Iraq that does look like he wants to walk the fine line, not getting rid of all the American support that he receives. But at the same time, he was off in Tehran yesterday, and he was meeting with senior government officials in Iran. He met with the Ayatollah, supreme leader. And what did that supreme leader say? He said this. He said that the PMF, that is this huge Shiite militia that has been used to conquer territory from Islamic State for Iran in Iraq, he said that the PMF is an important and blessed phenomenon. That's what he said. That's what Ayatollah Khamenei said, right beside Abadi. Who Abadi, looking at this and looking at the size of this militia, understanding that Islamic State would still be in Iraq without this group of 100,000 fighters, he didn't balk at that. Yes, they are, according to Abadi as well, a important and blessed phenomenon. And then he also said, "I think it's important, Mr. Abadi, Prime Minister of Iraq, that this Shiite militia, that of course you understand answers to me, that they stay in Iraq and that they don't disband and that they become part of your Iraqi forces, basically infiltrating the Iraqi military with a huge force. And Mr. Abadi says, "Okay, let's do that." So virtually right now we're looking at, don't believe anyone that tells you otherwise, Iraq belongs to Iran. That's happened. That's something we editor-in-chief of thetrumpet.com prophesied a long time ago, back in 1994, 95, said that was going to happen, that Iran was going to lead this group of nations that is anti-West, anti-Europe, that's going to be this belligerent power that pushes across the Middle East, and especially that forecast picked up when America invaded Iraq in 2003. And we said at that time, Iraq is going to fall to Iran. Well, that's happened. That's documentable. That would be generally agreed upon by most analysts, most observers of the Middle East. So that's the Iraqi side. And that's what happened at the end of May. One of this group reached the border of Syria. And then what also happened shortly thereafter is there was this lightning-fast offensive by Afghani troops that belong to Iran, that are basically mercenaries, that are paid a certain fee, that are Shiites, so they believe in the cause as well. And they were pushing in this amazing offensive across the desert of eastern Syria, and they reached the border. They reached the border as well. What date was that? I think that was June 12th. June 12th, 2 weeks ago. They reached the Syrian side of the border. Now, the Syrian side, the troops, the Iranian-backed troops on the Syrian side, they met the border at a lower portion or a more southern portion of the border, and the Iraqi PMF or the troops that belong to Iran, that answer to Iran in the Iraq side, they are further north. So they aren't directly connected right now. But why are they racing to the border? Why are they celebrating? Why are they taking pictures? Why is Iran talking about how much they control across the Middle East right now? Because that's their goal. That's their goal. Their goal is to dissolve this border between Syria and Iraq and control this large swath of territory. Well, unfortunately for them, even though they have reached the border right now, they have a defiant United States that is not wanting this to happen. And the United States is starting to do something about it. Now, looking back for the past five or six years of the Syrian civil war, again, the United States did not once act against Iranian interests, fight against Iranian-backed soldiers, whether it be the Syrian regime, whether it be Hezbollah, whether it be the Shiite militias in Iraq. None of that took place. Now, in the past month, because of Iran's goal is so obvious right now to the whole world, and it's extremely obvious to Mr. Trump, we've had 5 or 6 or 7 instances where Americans have fought against Iranian-backed proxies. This is a big change. And the escalation is increasing. It's happening every day now. Iran is fighting against the Islamic State, against the United States, obviously. United States is fighting back against Iran in a very overt and obvious way, and it's happening in eastern Syria. Now, just to show how much this was Iran's goal and how much Iran is not shy about letting the world know, back when they reached the Syrian border back on June 12th, who was there? Who was there amongst that Afghani militia that answers to Iran? It was none other but their Quds Force leader, Iranian Quds Force leader, Qassem Soleimani. And if you have any idea, or if you want to know what Iran's strategy is across the Middle East, follow this man. Where is he coming up and picked? Where is he? Where are pictures of him? Or which locality is he in? You can go back to the fight against Aleppo, or back late last year, he was there. You go against what was happening on the Golan Heights, the Syrian side of the Golan Heights, he was there. Then you can even go back to Qassem Soleimani heading up to Moscow back in 2015 to ask Putin to come down and help them fight. He was the one that did that. And now, where is he? Well, he's on the border between Syria and Iraq. And he is their general that leads a very diligent fighting force, the IRGC Quds Force. And this is the force that is really ensuring Iran's gains outside of, out of their own country take place. And he was there telling the whole world, this is what we're doing. I mean, it's obvious. Who's going to stop us? Right now, it looks like the United States might have something to say about it. I want to play a clip for you from Mr. Rex Tillerson. This was taken a couple of days ago, and it's talking about what the United States, well, the formulating policy, or the policy of the United States vis-a-vis Iran, and how that is in the process of formulation. Here he is.
Well, our Iranian policy is under development, has not yet been presented to the president. But I would tell you that we certainly recognize Iran's continued destabilizing presence in the region, their payment of foreign fighters, their export of militia forces in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen, their support for Hezbollah. And we are taking action to respond to Iran's hegemony. Additional sanctions actions have been put in place against individuals and others. We continually review the merits, both from a standpoint of diplomatic but also international consequences of designating the Iranian Revolutionary Guard in its entirety as a terrorist organization. As you know, we have designated the Quds. Our policy towards Iran is to push back on this hegemony, contain their ability to develop, obviously, nuclear weapons, and to work towards support of those elements inside of Iran that would lead to a peaceful transition of that government. Those elements are there, certainly, as we know.
Excuse me,
So you hear that from Mr. Tillerson. This is something that's very important, marks a big change from United States' previous policy, and it is calling even for regime change in Iran. And he said, we are going to push back on what Iran is doing across the Middle East, and it looks like right now that is what they're doing, especially in eastern Syria. So why is this important? How does it look to be fulfilling a biblical prophecy? That's what's important. I would say that what the United States is doing right now in eastern Syria is actually quite surprising. It is actually quite surprising, especially considering what Mr. Trump said when he was a candidate for presidency. He said basically had a policy of isolationism where he wasn't going to engage American forces in battles around the world, not going to put many boots on the ground. And as yet, he hasn't done that, but he is getting a lot of bang for his buck right now in eastern Syria. I mean, he's got the United States has a small base. I think there's a few hundred American troops there, which are mainly advisors to a couple of their proxy forces, if you can call them that, and some Jordanian forces as well, and they're training them up. And this is located right on the border between Jordan, Syria, and Iraq. And over the past month, we've had numerous instances where Iranian proxies approach this base. Every time they do, they get blown out of the sky or blown up in their military convoys on the way there, and the United States is pushing back against them. But it is interesting because it's probably something that we didn't necessarily foresee was going to happen, that the United States would become so involved here. And certainly biblical prophecy indicates that the United States is not going to be the ones benefiting from this fight against Iran, stopping them from producing this roadway or being able to connect their forces from Syria to Iraq. And yet it probably will help another power to benefit from it. What I'm talking about here, as far as biblical prophecy goes, is a specific prophecy that is found in the book. Well, it's two prophecies, really. One prophecy in Psalm 83, which we've talked about on this program quite a lot, details an alliance that will exist between Arab states in the Middle East, including Turkey. And that includes Saudi Arabia, that includes Jordan, it'll include Turkey. But it'll also include, as it brings out, the territory that makes up Syria and Lebanon, in fact. And why this is important, because that alliance in the Bible doesn't mention Persia. It doesn't mention Persia. Persia, of course, is the ancient name for Iran. And that's because Iran is part of another Middle Eastern alliance, an alliance called the King of the South. Nations going to be involved in that are Iran, Iraq, Egypt, Libya, and even across into Ethiopia. They're all going to be allied with Iran as part of their alliance. And yet, if you look at it right now, who's allied with Iran fiercely across the Middle East? Egypt's not yet. They were when the Muslim Brotherhood was in power, but they're not yet. Who you have in Iran's back pocket? Well, you have Lebanon basically becoming a state beholden to Hezbollah in the south, and then you also have Syria. And yet, biblical prophecy says that Syria and Lebanon aren't going to belong to Iran. They're not going to belong to Iran. I want to play a clip now from Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flory stating basically this a couple of years ago.
But this Psalm 83 indicates that Syria is going to have a break with Iran. that they're going to break away. Now, you don't see much of that in the headlines today, but you do see enough violence there to see where it might be able to do that. But most people don't draw that conclusion. We do, because we've been prophesying it for, well, close to 20 years now.
Yeah, we see that. No one else sees that, but we see that. And that's why we're focused on Eastern Syria. Because if you look at a map and you see that Iraq is going to be allied with Iran, that's happened already. And then you look at that map and you see Syria and you see Lebanon and you know that they're not going to be allied with Iran, even though they are right now. Where's the dividing line? Where's the dividing line between these two Middle Eastern groups of allied groups? Iran's group, basically, Saudi Arabia's group with Turkey on the other side. Where's that dividing line? Well, it's Eastern Syria. It's Eastern Syria. And that's why we're watching Eastern Syria, because the United States right now is saying, no, you're not going to combine your forces across this territory, across the Syrian-Iraqi border. Bible prophecy indicates, therefore, that this area where fighting is right now picking up between the United States and Iran, that area is going to be a constant source of friction. It will be a dividing line between two alliances that are at war with each other, or at least their interests are diametrically opposite to each other. Now, what does that mean? I mean, we are extrapolating a little bit to in this situation, of course, but it is obvious that this is where the dividing line is going to be, somewhere in eastern Syria. Whether or not the United States is fully successful at cutting off western Syria from Iraq, from Iran, we'll see. I mean, Bible prophecy doesn't indicate that, as I said, that the United States is going to be benefiting from this. Rather, it says that Europe is going to be the one that is going to lead this Psalm 83 alliance, a Europe led by Germany. So we're expecting the Europeans at some point to get involved here. But what's important looking at this right now, Eastern Syria right now, is that this is the focus of the world. This is the focus of Russia. This is the focus of Iran. It's pouring resources into this fight. Qassem Soleimani is there. They need their land bridge across the Middle East to the Mediterranean. The United States is saying, we're not going to allow you to do it, whether or not the United States stays around. And to be effective there, you might have to put boots on the ground, which the American public and Mr. Trump won't want to do. Won't want to do. Another power is going to be benefiting from this current conflict, and this is Europe. Now, looking at the facts and looking to Europe to try and find somebody that's aware of what Iran is doing or willing to actually fight against it or speak against it, it's hard to find, I'll admit. I'll admit that that sounds extremely odd that Europe would be the ones, with Germany specifically, that is going to control Syria and Lebanon. Looking at history, it doesn't sound that strange. I mean, the French, they were in control of this territory in the post-World War I era. That's who dominated this area, the French. So it's not ahistorical. But right now, looking at how strong Iran is in Syria and Lebanon, it does sound a little bit absurd. But that's why we are focusing on Eastern Syria right now, because it could be the fighting of the United States right now could be setting up a column, a wall, a barrier that prevents Iran from pushing further westward. And that's what your Bible says is going to happen. Again, your Bible doesn't say United States is going to benefit from this. Europe will. But maybe the United States is being used right now to try and hedge about Iran's gains in the Middle East, and even bringing these two alliances of the Psalm 83 alliance together and this King of the South, hedging that to ensure that it does not grow. So what will Iran do then if it cannot control this territory? We know it wants to access the Mediterranean Sea. We've talked about that quite a lot. It's part of its goal is to access the Eastern Mediterranean through this land bridge. Well, maybe they'll divert further attention south, further attention through the Persian Gulf, further attention around the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, further attention to Ethiopia, Yemen, Egypt, Libya, to control territory and to control that territory and access the Mediterranean. That looks to be on the cards, and that too is something prophesied. When we come back, we're going to divert our attention briefly from eastern Syria, a place that you need to carefully watch to see what the United States does and to see if Europe is going to get involved there to stop Iran's march into across the border into Syria. We're going to divert our attention to the Persian Gulf and to the Saudi Arabian Peninsula to see what Iran is doing right there. We'll take one more break.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. They call it the City of Peace. But it is filled with violence. Yesterday, bloody crusades and sieges. Today, terrorism, rocket attacks, and stabbings. Intense international pressure, but no diplomatic solutions. This is Jerusalem. No city has suffered like it. Will there ever be peace? God says yes. There will be peace in Jerusalem, and not just for the Jews. It will be a peace that spreads to all people. How will God bring peace to Jerusalem? Request your free copy of Jerusalem in Prophecy to find out. The answer comes straight from your Bible. Peace is coming soon. Act today. Please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back again. We're talking about Iran and its actions in eastern Syria to try and control this territory across from Iraq, which they already now control, into Syria and the Mediterranean. And we've talked about how they're not going to do that. Bible prophecy indicates they are going to lose out in eastern Syria eventually, whether that's right now or shortly in the future. That remains to be seen. But there is fighting happening right there between the United States and Iran. That's very important to watch. But we're also going to divert our attention a little bit now to southern, south from there, and look at what Iran is doing in the Persian Gulf. And Bible prophecy does indicate that Iran is going to grow in strength through the Persian Gulf, around the Saudi Peninsula, and also controlling territories on the western side of the Red Sea, up through the Suez Canal, and even in southern the southern Mediterranean region. That is going to happen. That is going to happen. And maybe that push will be a result of them maybe losing some influence in Syria and Lebanon. We'll see about that. But it is important to note that when the Bible talks about Iran, the fundamental policy of that nation, as far as their foreign policy is concerned, is pushing. Pushing, 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 pushing. They don't back down. They're not going to back down. They actually tell you what their strategy is. They say it from the podium. That is the religious podium with the Ayatollah. He tells you what he wants to do, and then he goes out and tries to do it. And he says to the world, stop me. Stop me. And up until now, over the past 8 years, there hasn't been a lot of world response to that. Well, there might be soon. There will be soon, if Bible prophecy indicates that there will be some group of nations that will stop Iran. It's not going to be the United States, though. But let's look a little bit further at what Iran is doing to further its strategy in this waterway between the Persian Gulf, Strait of Hormuz, northern Indian Ocean, across Oman, Yemen, and into the Red Sea. Again, you need a map. You need to educate yourself if you want to understand prophecy. You need to understand geography, or else these things could happen. Bible prophecy could be fulfilled. This was written down 2,500, 2,600 years ago in your Bible, and you're not, you don't understand enough geographically to see them come to fruition, to see them happen. And that's one of the purposes of prophecy, to alert us to God's powerful existence and his powerful hand in world events today. Now, if you could, if you had the power to say something and then 2,500 years later to bring it to pass, I would say that's extremely powerful. And that's what we're seeing right now with Iran. But if you don't understand more of the geography of this region, it's going to be hard to put that together. I mean, we do our best to help you, but you still need to get a map out and look at it and see these locations in the world, see what Iran's strategy is. And notice, of course, that the prophet Daniel did indicate a lot of this was going to happen years ago, and that we've been saying it as well, especially concerning this Iran for 25 years now. And that will excite you and that will motivate you when you understand. When you understand, it's like if you have a good teacher, if you've got a good history teacher or a good geography teacher, a good science teacher in school, you're going to remember that teacher, you're going to remember what he taught you because you're invested in it, because you did your homework, because the teacher was exciting. Well, I'm hoping the Trumpet Daily, Mr. Stephen Flurry, does very well, and the other, the Trumpet Hour as well. We're doing our best to educate you, but you need a fundamental understanding of certain history elements and geography especially to make you excited about the subject as well. And of course, God will bless anyone's efforts that take steps towards that, to educate themselves, to help them understand the prophecies that God is bringing about. If he sees somebody doing that, if he sees somebody pulling out a map and being like, well, I want to understand what's happening in the world so I can see God's powerful hand in world events, why wouldn't God bless that? Of course he would. Nobody is too unintelligent to not understand this. You can understand it, but of course we have to do our part. Anyhow, we're talking right now about this southern focus of Iran as well to ensure that it governs the Persian Gulf. And these are just two stories from yesterday. This is one that was published in Arab News. Yes, it's a Saudi Arabian outlet. But nevertheless, this is what it says. I don't doubt that these events took place. Saudi Arabia said Monday that it had captured three Iranian Revolutionary Guards aboard an explosives-laden boat going towards an oil platform in the Arabian Gulf. Well, that's something that Iran wants to target. Oil platforms in the Arabian Gulf, the Persian Gulf. Of course, they call it the Arabian Gulf, not the Persian Gulf, because that would imply that Iran or Persia should be controlling it. But they call it the Arabian Gulf. And this boat with IRGC members, IRGC, again, they're the powerful force in Iran that belongs directly to the Ayatollah. He tells them directly what they to do. Of course, the Iranian military does that as well, but there's a different chain of command. The IRGC is direct from the Ayatollah himself. And through the past 20 or 30 years, the IRGC has taken over Iran, controlling, I think, about 30 or 35% of GDP in Iran right now. So yeah, they're a god, but they're also controlling the finances in Iran. That's why so much money is not going to the Iranian public, many of which don't like the current regime in Iran. And that's why they're able to fund and support so many actions outside their nation, because the IRGC is capturing all this money. Anyhow, the Saudi Arabia did discover these boats heading towards this oil platform, and it was captured and was laden with explosives. And this is what their press statement said. On Friday, June 16th, three small boats bearing red and white flags entered Saudi territorial waters in the Arabian Gulf. They headed rapidly towards oil platforms in the Saudi oil field. Immediately, the Saudi naval forces fired warning shots, but the boats did not respond. They don't respond. This is what's happened by that U.S. base in eastern Syria. Hey, you're approaching our base. Iranian forces, stop. Halt. Don't come any closer. We will fire. Well, they cry Allah Akbar and they keep on traveling. And they will have to be stopped. They will have to be stopped forcefully or they will keep coming. America looks like it might have realized that to a certain extent. Europe is still coming around, but we expect them to come around. Anyhow, these boats didn't respond. Consequently, one of the boats was captured and it was loaded with weapons for subversive purposes, but the other two boats escaped. And then the Saudi authorities are currently questioning those IRGC members, what were they doing there? Well, of course, they're trying to attack their arch enemy, Saudi Arabia. But that's one of the limiting factors in Middle Eastern commentary right now about Iran. They're like, it's just about Iran and Saudi Arabia. Iran just wants to encircle Saudi Arabia. And they do. That's not what I'm saying. But their goals go so much further than that. So much further. And they've even said as much. They won't rest until the whole world is an Islamic caliphate that comes under their rule. That's what they want. And they are benefiting from years, decades, really, of American and European weakness. Saudi Arabia, of course, has, kind of like Israel, they have a very good understanding of how much Iran wants to dominate them. And so they're taking actions to try and stop that. And even that's why we see a closening of the relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia. It's not for what Saudi Arabia can give to the United States. That's not it. That's not it at all. They want a relationship with the United States for what the United States can do for them at trying to stop Iran. In fact, if you go through further biblical prophecies, you see that Saudi Arabia will end up turning on the United States after the Iranian axis is destroyed. Anyhow, that was one story. And this isn't odd. I mean, boats laden with explosives are an Iranian tactic. Now they're doing it in the Persian Gulf. They've been doing it in the Red Sea on the other side of Yemen. They've been doing that for the past 6 months as well, targeting U.S. vessels, targeting Saudi Arabian vessels, targeting UAE vessels with these explosives-laden boats, as well as firing missiles from land to ships traveling through here to try and jeopardize and control this trade route. That's what they're doing. You don't hear much about that, but that's what they're doing right now. They targeted an oil platform in northern Yemen last month. They didn't make it there again. But what happens if they do? What happens if they start taking out oil platforms across the Middle East? Well, the oil price is going to it's going to jump an amazing degree. But it's also going to threaten trade through those areas as well. Companies will be taking second thoughts about whether they travel through these important waterways where so much of world trade travels through. Anyhow, there's just one other story I want to mention here. And this is referring to what President Trump is now doing with Oman. Look at a map again. Where's Oman? Oman's next to Yemen. Next to Yemen, further to the east. And it was a policy of the Obama administration to actually use Oman as a go-between, initially between Iran and the United States. Back, I think it was all the way back in 2009 or 2010, Hillary Clinton, she approached the Omanis and said, we're going to be interested in some type of deal with Iran over their nuclear program. Can we do that? Can you help? And Oman, with back channel talks, was working on that years before it became known to the American public. Years. They were working on behalf of the United States under President Obama and Iran. And we wrote at the time that this was happening, when this started to become more public, that Oman is likely going to fall into the Iranian orbit because of what Iran wants to be doing across around the Persian Gulf. We talked about already, the editor-in-chief did, Gerald Flurry, about Yemen falling into Iran's orbit, and they did that. They did that back in 2014. He said that they likely would in 2012, and that happened. And now we've talked about Oman doing that. And what we've seen over the past 6 or 8 months is Oman actually been using, in a similar way that Syria has been, as some type of land bridge to get weaponry to the Houthis, the Shiite-backed Shiite people that are backed and supported by Iran in northern Yemen. They're the ones that are targeting a lot of the oil platforms, targeting ships in the Red Sea. And Oman, before times, was more of an honest broker, you could say, or at least a broker or a nation that wanted to be on good terms with a number of nations. But right now, as we wrote, it looks like Oman has become beholden to Iran. Iran is traveling the 20 miles or such across the Straits of Hormuz to Oman on the other side of the Strait of Hormuz, dropping off a lot of military equipment, and that is taking the overland route through Oman to Yemen. And Mr. Trump is trying to push back at this, again, acknowledging the fact that this has happened. Oman said it wasn't happening. If that was the case, why did we have the CIA director, Mike Pompeo, and Trump's deputy national security advisor, General Ricky Waddell, visiting Muscat, or the capital of Oman, back in June? June 11th. That's what they were doing. What were they saying? Hey, you need to stop that. You need to cut off your relationship with Iran into this, in the sense of not allowing them to use your territory to fund terrorism, to support the Houthis in Western Yemen. We'll see if that actually changes. But again, this is what Iran is doing. They push, they push, they push, they push until somebody stops them. Until somebody stops them. And up to this point, no one has really stopped them. We'll see how hard Mr. Trump moves to stop them in eastern Syria. It looks like it might be he's actually doing something, and he might be doing something in Oman. But Bible prophecy indicates that America is going to get to the point that they're so weak, they can't even stop Iran. And at that point, maybe it will be Europe that moves forward to fulfill that void. That's what Bible prophecy says. That's what Bible prophecy says. And it's time for all of us to stay glued to the Middle East to see how they're being fulfilled. You've been listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Have a wonderful day, and the program will be with you tomorrow.